Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Let's talk about some of these dogs that maybe the Titans might draft, right?
There we go.
So we started the show today when we came on talking about wide receivers and some of the wideouts that are available in this draft.
Just going through positions.
I don't think the Titans take a wideout with their first pick.
Probably not.
But I could see them taking a possible second round.
Or even further down.
Sure. At some point, right?
Sure.
So we have kind of run through some of them. We talked a lot about DK Metcalf. I don't think he'll end up being there by the time the Titans will be looking at wide receiver.
There was an Ole Miss alum at this event at Greystone today over there in Dixon that asked about DK Metcalf, of course, clearly because he was an Ole Miss alum. But you're right. Go ahead.
Yeah. He can ask about quite a few wide receivers in this draft.
That's exactly what I told him. I said, there's not only one there, and he knew it.
Yeah. A.J. Brown, though, a guy that was with him that's not talked about as much as DK Metcalf. A lot of that, I think, is because of Metcalf's ability to really shine at the combine. But let's talk a little bit about A.J. Brown, because I watched that guy catch balls during the season last year that I thought there ain't no way he's hauling that in.
No, let me tell you what, A.J. Brown, I like this receiver on film when you really look at him. 6004, 226 pounds. He's got a long wingspan. He's got 78, he's a 449 guy, but he's a 36.5-inch vertical jumper, 10-foot broad jumper. He's got strength. He's 19 times on the bench. But here's what, when you watch him on tape, you see that his size is nice. He's got good production, but he was used mostly there on slants, shallow crossers, and middle-of-the-field routes. Because what was happening, Metcalf was running all the vertical routes, all the takeoff, the vertical routes. Okay. He's a natural route runner. He's got natural hands. I like him. He competes with the ball in his hands. He competes for the ball and he competes after the catch. I like this player. I really do.
In terms of DK Metcalf, though, the measurables were off the charts. And you talked about the vertical routes. Is there a concern there with him, though, that he might be limited in terms of the route tree?
Well, when you see him, all you've got to do is go, and again, it's not the end-all to be-all, and DK Metcalf is going to be a good player, but when you really start looking at the measurements that measure ability to break down and to move laterally and to do all those things, like, you know, a 4.50 short shuttle, a 7.38 3 cone, that's not real good short area change of direction stuff. And you can see it a little bit in his game, but he wasn't asked to break down and run the complete route tree when you look at him. He is a big vertical stretch. And guys, the way the league is going now with these combat catches that are occurring down the field, and you want somebody big that's going to be able to outmuscle DBs at the high point and do those things, this is a guy that you would want because his physical mismatch ability is off the charts. Yeah. Now, he's also got some injury issues that you and your medical people have got to reconcile that you think is going to be all right. But as far as a straight line, impressive physical athlete, DK Metcalf is that, and he was productive when he was able to play.
And so, that was a different kind of offense, like that Phil Longo, who's now at Carolina Mac Brown as the OC, but that was a different offense. So his wideouts didn't have to do a whole lot of that, and not to mention he had a lot of options there. Another guy, DeMarcus Lodge, when we're talking maybe later round possible wide receiver picks, and he was one of those nasty wideouts at Ole Miss.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Have you had a chance to even watch? I don't know how deep you kind of get into
these. Well, I get deep. I've done about
guys.
200 guys.
Okay. Good but Lord, but, Coach Mack.
But the thing that, yeah.
Like, I've watched like 50 guys and I'm spent.
50 is impressive.
That's
I'm serious.
Like tops. 50, but some of them I've seen
impressive.
In person.
Well, no, but you get a chance to see him in person, which is important. And the other thing is, you know what you're looking at. I mean, you can tell a player, and we were talking, you know, before we came live on the air, you know, I could take the four of us here in this room and we could watch tape and we could all pretty much discern the top half of this draft.
Right.
Because people that have those traits that just jump out at you on tape, you go, okay, you know, that's going to be a top, that's going to be a top pick for somebody at some place. The thing that, that the draft, the guts of the draft are what are so important as to where you need as many opinions as you can. And you need a lot of experience looking at it. And then you've got to need a good gut feel for where going. Lodge is one of those players. I mean, he's going to play in the league. Now, where you take him and where you put him, you know, in what you do, all of that. And let me just say something to the mock drafts. And I know we'll get into these later on. These are just opinions of a lot of people, but really look. All of these people that are giving you opinions on these mock drafts, they've never made one mock draft and one opinion that their future depended on it. Okay? Because once it's over, it's over. When you really know, and I respect people that are, that have made picks that their futures depended on it.
Yeah.
And that, and so that's how you know these mock drafts are all good. I love the cottage industry. I love the interest that it generates, but just keep in mind that, you know, it's important to know that when you're making decisions, it's important to know what consequences your decisions have on you. When you're involved with a club, you've got big consequences depending on decisions. That's why you dig so deep.
You know who we ran into yesterday that said they loved grinding tape with you?
Who's that?
Midday 180 guest, Blake Bettingfield.
Yeah, you know, look, I respect Blake because Blake did it for 19 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
his
Blake,
job depended on it.
No, his job and livelihood depended on it, and he grinded it. And plus, I mean, he was a boots on the ground guy at all these colleges. And you know, when I was there, you know, Blake was the Southeast Conference guy, and he had tremendous contacts, you know, inside the Southeast Conference. And that's what it takes. It takes your scouts that have boots on the ground at all these places. And the thing that I always, even when I was an assistant coach, I learned real quick from Bill Tobin in Chicago. And as coaches, you need to respect the scouts, because when you finally get a look at these players after the season is over, these guys have been on the road typing reports, looking at them for a year all over the country. So you have to respect that. I mean, you must respect that work because they put a lot of it into it.
Hey, thank you for, I know you had a lot of responsibilities today. Thank you for rushing down here and helping us out. Always good to see you. And we're a week and a day away.
Isn't that crazy? You know, it seems like forever once the season's over, but then once this stuff starts moving in on you, I mean, it's like a tsunami. You can see it coming, and then when it hits, you better be ready to get high ground.
These guys are always ready for anything. Do you think, like, if Roger Goodell just said, hey, we're moving the draft up until tomorrow, would they be ready?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
that's
too.
That's exactly what I said. I'm, like, 100% ready.
Yes.
If you have a question about a specific guy for Coach Mack, 615-737-1045. Let's go to Bob next up on 3HL. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Coach Mack, love to listen to you call the games on radio and your insights during the year. I have a quick question.
Thanks, Bob.
Who is the most pro-ready small college defensive tackle?
The most ready small college. How small a college are we talking about? I mean, no, I'm serious. And that's it's a good question. I just want to know how small a college you're going down to, because I've got some guys down the road, other than these big guys, you know, that I've talked about. You know, there's two defensive tackles at Texas A&M, Dalen Mack, Kingsley Keke. They're going to be very, very involved.
Is Houston a small college,
No, that's not a small college, okay. Is it? I mean, neither is Texas A&M, okay? But when you start looking at down the line guys, I guess you would say probably Colin Saunders at Western Illinois.
Yeah.
You want to talk about him? I mean, there's a guy that has made something, you know, for himself, especially in the Senior Bowl. You've got a smaller school, but he's got big production in those schools. And Bob, that's what you look for when you're looking at tape, when you're evaluating people and you're looking at smaller competition. It's not really the player's fault, the competition that he's playing against, but if you're seeing a guy that you want to transfer and you want to project into the NFL, if they are competing at a smaller level, they have to dominate that level. They have to dominate that level, and they have to have traits. But if I had to pick one, to your point, I would say Colin Saunders from Western Illinois.
Because small college guys get drafted all the time. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So that's what you're looking for, domination. And you know, talking to Blake Bettingfield yesterday and talking to you, I mean, these guys look at so many. I mean, just hundreds and up to 1,000 play. I mean, they know everybody.
Well,
they're going to find you.
Look, your scouts that start, they've already started on next year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're doing now. They start on next year. And you know, you're not going, you know, the days of finding a sleeper that nobody knows about, that's over. You know, that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, not like, you know, when I first started evaluating players, guys, it was in 1974 after I graduated from TCU. I started doing Southwest Conference players for Gil Brandt. Gil Brandt would pick a coach from each Southwest Conference schools and give you so many players in the conference to evaluate. You'd write a report, and then he'd give you $100, okay? And if he liked your reports, you'd keep doing it for him. So I did it for him at every college I was at. You know, he would have me write those reports. But in doing that, you learn how to not only write a report that is relevant, you also learn how to look at players through a lens of not what they're going to do for you, is how they fit in just playing the game. And so it doesn't matter where you play, the league will find you.
You talk about, since we're on the small kind of school, do they dominate against lesser competition? Is the jump to the NFL harder? Is the transition as far as level harder to get used to when you are a smaller school player?
Yes, it is, because of this, because of who you're going against. And you start going position by position, just the level of talent that you play against consistently down to down. If you're at a smaller school, you know, sometimes you're going to be dominating guys, you know, that are going to be doing other things other than football for their life's work. When you get into this league, you're going against full-grown men that are going to be doing this for their life's work for however long their career lasts. So that is important. And also the other thing is the technique. Technique, you know, that they have to use, and that they have to learn on the fly. And especially now, the way the CBA is, guys, the coach's time is so limited with these people on the field that if you get a guy from a smaller school, he is going to really have to apply himself not only to learn the nuances of the defense that you're putting in, which is much more complicated than what he's come from, also take a step or two or three or four up in levels of competition on a daily basis. He's also going to have to understand and learn quickly some of the tools that will help him sharp and hone his craft quick enough to be able to make a roster.
So that's where, like, some of these small school coaches and assistants even develop, like word on the street about, like, people know about them in the league. And so you're like, okay, this guy coached this guy, so I kind of know about him technique-wise. I know that
he has the fundamentals in place or something.
Right, and to your point, the scouts that go out too, let me tell you something else that they scout, that they scout coaches too.
Right.
Because they'll come back and say, look.
Reputation,
they will come back and say, these guys are great technique teachers. Or during practice, the way this guy runs his drills are really impressive. We need to keep our eye on this guy. I mean, that happens a lot too. I mean, I know it does. I mean, it happened for me with Cio Bricado. You know, I've known Cio Bricado forever, and everywhere I was coaching, when he would come look at players, you know, he would pull me aside and say, I like what you're doing on the field. You know, and so those types of things, they're not only scouting players, believe me, scouts that go out with boots on the ground, they're looking at anything that will improve their squad.
Talking about defensive tackle, so let's say Christian Wilkins, Ed Oliver, and Dexter Lawrence are all there. Well, is there a way to compare those three guys?
Yeah, there really is. Christian Wilkins is kind of a composite of the other two.
Okay.
And let's put him in the middle, because he's about size-wise in the middle of those two. He's bigger than what Ed Oliver is. Okay, he's not as big as what Dexter Lawrence is. He's a little bit more powerful, I would say, but he's not as twitchy as what Ed Oliver is. Okay, but he's not as powerful road grader-wise like Dexter Lawrence is. So then when you're looking at those three players, if they're sitting there, then what you have to determine is, how do they fit in to the scheme that we have, and also are they a complement to what they will be lining up next with, all right? That's the decision we made, and I can take you back to when we drafted Aaron Donald, when we already had Michael Brockers, who was a number one pick the year before from LSU. Big, long dude, looks a lot like Jeffrey Simmons does right now to me. But we said, who is the best guy we can complement Brock with that's going to be a great shade player? Who's the best three technique we can bring in here that can now give people trouble who to double? That's where we hit on Aaron Donald, and that's why we set and took him, even though we had taken another defensive lineman interiorly with a first-round draft pick. That's what you're going to have to discern to where Ed Oliver plays. Ed Oliver will not play over the nose like he played in college at Houston. He's going to be a three technique for somebody. He's extremely, extremely quick. He's got unbelievable bend and move skills. Now, he doesn't have much of an anchor to him right now, so you'll have to decide, you know, how do you want to play him? How are you going to play him? Dexter Lawrence, you know you're going to put him in there. He's going to command a double team from the time he walks in the door. Okay. This is a big, strong dude. What you would try to perfect on Dexter Lawrence, if you bring him to your roster, you want to perfect at least one or two pass rush moves that you can use and move him down inside so that you might later on in his career, and I'm not saying real late, but in his career, make a three down player out of him.
So three technique meaning.
Okay, good. And I'm glad you did that. I was over at Dixon today and one guy asked me, Coach Mack, I hear you all the time talk about personnel groups. I don't understand. I said, we had a tutorial on personnel groups with about 500 people there at Greystone, and it was awesome. And then I questioned them I would do something, then I'd stop and say, all right, what does 21 mean? You know, so I would question them during that. I'm not sure. I bet they wanted Coach Mack to leave. But
I doubt it.
But anyway, a three technique you line up on the outside shoulder of the offensive guard. You line up on the outside shoulder of the offensive guard, and those guys that you play as a three technique, most of the time what you're trying to do is get a guy that can beat a gap, can beat an outside shoulder, because if they get doubled, they're going to get doubled by a tackle, you know, coming down. So you put a real violent three technique, like, you know, what Jarrell Casey is. You put him over the guard. Now, an offense has got to decide, are we going to slide protect so we can give him some help, move a tackle down on him? Are we going to double him with a tackle? If we double him with a tackle, now who are we blocking that edge with? Okay, so those are the things that you like to work. But a three technique lines up on the outside shoulder of the guard, and most of those guys are scat and get guys that can get upfield quick.
Joey's going to ask some questions about some Vandy guys. We were just talking about Corey Chavis you had from Vanderbilt.
I love Chavez. He was Chavez. The best. He was the best dude ever. Smart. He played corner. He played safety later on in his career. I cried when Mike Tice got him when he was a free agent. He signed him to big money. I begged our people to keep him. I loved Corey Chavis, the smartest dude. He loved ball as much as any guy I've ever coached. I just told the story about when he was a rookie. First night of training camp, had everybody up in his room with a bed sheet on the wall watching VHS tapes, from asking me about the Bears games against the Lions when I was coaching at the Bears, and I was watching. I love Corey Chavis from Vanderbilt, one of my all-time favorites. He's living in St. Louis
Coach
right
Mack,
now.
Coach Mack, come on in. No,
let me ask you, what were y'all thinking here against Barry Sanders when you were doing this? And I went, who is this dude? I mean, he lives in St. Charles now, you know, where the Rams facility used to be. I would see him a lot. He's got draftnasty.com.
Yep, that's
it. Is his draft. I love Chavez. Chavez, if you're listening, hit Coach Mack up. It's draft time.
So to give a little more background into that, so your responsibility was to go check on the rookies on the fourth floor.
They sent me up there for the first night because they knew I'd go get it. I was a defensive coordinator then, and I could snap them to attention pretty quick. And so, they want to just be sure they got started off on the right foot in Flagstaff.
So you walk off the elevator.
And there was not a swinging hammer in their room. I mean, there wasn't anybody. Nobody was in their room. I mean, I'm looking around, and there's nobody's in their room. Nobody. And I'm going, what's wrong with these guys? And they were all down in Chavez's room watching tape. I mean, only time it's ever happened to me in 31 years. That guy was special. I loved him.
And that's like if you're like teaching high school or something and you have like a field trip away in another town or something and you go check on them in the hotel and they're all like studying math in one room together. Like,
I mean, I was just, and this guy hadn't been on campus very long and he already had him. I mean, he was like the Pied Piper. They followed him everywhere. He knew so much about the NFL.
Smart. He's so smart.
I loved him.
Dave McGinnis, brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Need great health care coverage at an affordable price? Let Farm Bureau Health Plans coach you through it. They've got you covered. With that said, let's go in on a couple of Vanderbilt guys. Joey in Portland next up on 3HL. Hey, Joey, what's up?
What's up, guys? Coach Mack.
Joey.
You're down, baby.
Joey, what's up, man?
Hey, yeah, I was just curious. I hadn't really heard anybody talk about two players who really I liked in the Vanderbilt defense.
Okay.
And that was Jawan Williams, who frequently Coach Mason called a green unicorn because I think he's like 6'5", 6'4", somewhere in there. And I wanted to also know about the safety, Charles Wright. I know he had some injury this year, but, man, when he played, he could lay some wood. And I just wanted to get your opinion on those two guys.
Let's start with Jawan Williams.
Let's start with Williams because that's a very, very interesting player. You know, I did a lot of work on him. Let me give you exactly what he is. Let's not guess. He's 6'0", 3'5", 211, 78-inch wing, which is long. He ran a 4.64 at the combine, and he bettered that at his pro day. You know, he bettered that at his pro day, but he's got a 1.65 10, which is really good. And here's why I wrote about him. This was from watching him on tape. He's number 8, if you want to watch tape. Has size, athleticism. He's got length to play press man, which is huge right now in the National Football League. He's aggressive on tape. He likes contact. I mean, he really does. He needs more technical skills and spatial awareness sometime, just like any corner coming out of the NCAA. He needs work on his mechanics. But what he has traits that you cannot invent. You have to have these. He's got length. He's got athleticism. He can play press man. He can mirror down the field. He doesn't have super catch up speed, but because of that length, he can impede a route off the line of scrimmage and disrupt timing. I like this player, and I like this player for two reasons. Not only his athletic traits, but he is aggressive. He's an aggressive player at the corner with some size. I know Bill Belichick the other day, you know, said was looking at all of these combat catchers in the National Football League that are coming out in this draft, these bigger receivers that are big, and, you know, and he's wondering who's going to cover these guys. This is a guy that can cover these guys because he can match them with length down the field, and especially when he disrupts them off the line. You're right. Wright is a guy. It's probably going to be later on. He's a good, tough player. There's a lot of guys within that frame of probably where he's going to be. It will just be the flavor that the team likes when his turn comes up.
Jawan Williams.
SEC linebacker is what Charles Wright.
Yes. Yeah, Jawan Williams is a guy that Derek Mason called him a unicorn to us, and he said you just don't find guys like this because he started as a safety and he moved him to corner. Because his hips were so fluid, and he's built like a safety in terms of size.
There's a guy just like him at Virginia named Juan Thornhill that's a big, long dude that's got some of that stuff but has played both corner and safety. And what's important nowadays in the National Football League, you know, for defensive coordinators, because I talk to all of them, is they would like to be able to have somebody, if somebody's playing a whole load of 11 personnel against them, a safety that they can have in there that can drop down and be able to mirror and cover a tight end man-to-man, but can also come back and play the quarters or half or the third of the field. Those types of guys are invaluable.
615-737-1045. Let's go to Chris next up on 3HL. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Yo, what's up, guys? I'm so glad I'm on.
Yep. Chris, I'm glad you're on, too.
Hey, you know, Coach Mack, I talked to you last time. In case, I know y'all been having difficulties. If you have trouble hearing me, just hand signal me. That'll be fine.
We'll do that.
Listen, so, Coach, you know, if you remember the last time I talked to you, I talked to you about the quarterback, talked to you about Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, compared them midseason and their stats.
Right.
I talked to you about another quarterback matchup. I think the Titans have already made their draft move. Now, hear me out. This is my theory, and I want to ask you a question based on my theory.
I will hear you out, brother.
I think all Titans fans are on the limb of wanting a quarterback. They wanted a quarterback. I think the Titans made a draft move, and they got a quarterback. They got rid of Gabbert, and they got Ryan Tannehill. Now, backdrop to that, my first two NFL games were in Miami when I lived in Miami working in the yachting industry. I saw them play Buffalo and saw them play Dallas, and I fell in love with Ryan Tannehill. And on my dashboard is Ryan Tannehill now wearing a Titans helmet.
There you go.
Do you think, this is my first question, okay. Do you think that Ryan Tannehill is better than Marcus Mariota? Just flat out, just question on that yes or no. And then my real question is this. This is a tough question for a lot of friends I've been asking. Are organizations, not just the Titans organization, say, for instance, Ryan Tannehill is a better quarterback than Marcus Mariota this year.
He's not.
Is Vrabel in training camp, and maybe he's not. Maybe he's not. But I'm not saying that he is. I'm just saying, say they go into camp, and say Tannehill just, man, he just got it, you know? Maybe he doesn't start, but he just got it. Goes well, starts throwing well, plays well, and he's just better than Marcus. Is a coach going to say, this is my question, does it come down to money?
No, it doesn't come down to money at all. And once they made the move on this guy, what they did, they made the move on Tannehill. It was very clear that Marcus is a starter. Tannehill is going to be the backup. It was a tremendous move by John Robinson.
Agreed.
Because he was able to bring in a viable backup, which you're going to need in this league. Tannehill has fought injuries also in the latter part here of his career. But to be able to get two guys of similar ability so that Arthur Smith is able to have one game plan going in, and then if he should miss, if his starter quarter, should miss a series, should miss a quarter, should miss two quarters. You don't have to alter your game plan at all. Exactly. And plus, you've got an experienced backup. This is the best scenario we could have. But Marcus is a starter. Ryan Tannehill is the backup. I've known Ryan Tannehill from his days at Big Spring, Texas. You know, when he was playing out there in Big Spring and then went to Texas A&M. Good athlete, good quarterback, great addition for the Titans as a backup to Marcus Mariota.
Ultimately, I think it comes down to, like, this nerve thing, you just don't know. You don't know what to do about that. I mean, Marcus could hit his elbow going into the bubble and miss a month because he needs rest. And I think they're just protecting themselves by upgrading at the backup quarterback position. And as you said, I think very well, that they don't have to change anything if they put Tannehill in there.
No, it was a tremendous move, and especially the way he was able to maneuver it with the money. It was a great move.
So in terms of, like, ladder guys, like if they were to go quarterback down the draft, I'm curious to get your take on a couple of SEC guys. Jared Stidham, who Don knows well, out of Auburn, and Jordan Ta'amu from Ole Miss, who's got that Aloha spirit.
Yeah, well, both of those guys have won games in the Southeast Conference, and I've watched both of them, you know, and they've both come from different offenses, which is extremely important to look at and know. And any quarterback that's coming from the NCAA to the National Football League, they're going to have a learning curve. The thing I will say about Stidham and Ta'amu, is that how you pronounce his name? Both of those guys, you could tell during the course, and I do a lot of all the Southeast Conference games with that coach-to-coach show that I do with Doug Matthews. Watching those guys are going to get into a camp somewhere, and they're going to be able to compete for a third spot, or if the worst happens to them, they will be able to be on a practice squad somewhere. Because look, the jump from a quarterback to the National Football League is huge anyway to begin with, but they both have qualities that are going to put them, I would think, on a National Football League training camp roster for sure, and then maybe after that.
I guess what I'm asking, the general manager's on record saying that he wants a developmental quarterback, so I'm trying to figure out who that
is. Well, I don't know. I mean, you've got another guy at North Carolina State, Ryan Finley. You know, yeah. that you look at, you know, you look and see. I mean, you don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're, I mean, I don't go up and look at the board. You know, I'm not in their draft meetings. I used to make a lot of those decisions. I don't anymore. But I do know if he says that and he means that, well, then he's got some people targeted.
Let's go to Kevin, 615-737-1045 in Bellevue. Kevin, what's up?
We got a lot of callers. I love this. Go, Kev.
Hey, Coach, two quick questions.
Okay.
First, I'm going to jump off here after this. I've heard a lot of coaches say, I like this guy because he's got good hips. Could you explain that? And one of the best running backs that was actually coming out of college, last game of the year, he blows his ACL out, Bryce Love at Stanford. When y'all go after a guy that's been injured, what's your process? Do you talk to the doctor that done the surgery, x-rays, and stuff like that? Thank you.
Kev, great question. Look, when you talk about hips, I mean, different positions are different. If you're talking about skill positions, you're talking about loose hips, being able to change direction, being able to drop your weight and transition from a forward movement to a backward movement or to a horizontal movement, or as a running back, jump cuts from a lateral movement ability. That's what you're talking about. If you're stiff in the hips and stiff in the lowers, you can tell it real quick. It's like players are playing on stilts, and you can tell it real quick. And when somebody turns a corner and does not have hip or lower body flexibility, it's like they're grinding coffee when they're turning a corner. I mean, it takes forever to get around the corner. You can tell that pretty quick once you're used to know what you're looking at and know what you're seeing. You know, talking about Bryce Love, whenever you have a good player, I mean, it just happened to Jeffrey Simmons, the same thing.
Same type.
Then what's going to happen is, you know, the type of player, but you're going to have to see how he can fit into your roster, and you're going to have to be patient enough to wait on him. Just like when the Smith kid came out of Notre Dame and the Cowboys took him and waited on him. You know, when he had that horrific knee injury in the bowl game, they're against Arizona State. But I mean, they're at Arizona State. But when you look at him now, look what they've got. You had a first-round talent that, because of a horrific injury, you're going to have to be willing to say, we're going to take him and we're basically going to redshirt him and let our medical people, our training staff, our weight staff get him back to form where he can come in. I was actually down there, you know, in Oxnard and watching them when they put him first back onto the field. You know, because we worked out against him with the Rams down there, and you could see it was coming. But now you can see with he and Van Der Esch back there, you've got to be willing to wait and be patient. And if your front office and your coaching staff is willing and able to do that, then you're going to get a talent later on in the draft just because of the injury.
What about just in general injury history? When you look at a guy like DK Metcalf, who, you know, broken foot his freshman year, had some other injuries, but really that neck injury. So do teams like go to doctors? They look at scans? How does it work?
It's huge. First of all, you know, the combine is an extensive, the combine is a massive.
That's really where
that's where it is. And then you can get your own personal people to look at it. You can have rechecks. But if you have, if you are, that's the biggest value of the combine now, because everybody is there and they all get the same medical exam. And it's very, very extensive. Believe me. I mean, they run through everything. They find things about them that kids don't haven't never even known. They find things about them in their family history that may go, man, we drafted a kid out of Missouri at St. Louis, a receiver that found a heart condition that was congenital, and it was able to help his siblings that didn't know they also had it.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of things that they find there. But when you find those things out, then if you really want the player, you've got to vet this, because once you take someone that has a history, you have to be comfortable enough to take him, knowing that you are going to get a return on your investment.
Well, you saw it. What was it? The Kentucky, I think, tight end. Now I'm totally blanking, but they found something in his medical exam with his heart and all that, and he went and had to get a couple of different opinions.
No, absolutely. So. And those types of things are important, not only for football now, but for their life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that's one of the most extensive physicals, I mean, you could ever get. I mean, I think the only other thing that I would know you would get that big of an extensive physical on, if you're going to be an astronaut. You know,
yeah,
and that's about it.
615-737-1045. Ron, next up for Dave McGinnis. Ron, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Coach?
Ron, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing pretty good, brother. First of all, let me throw mad props to 104.5. I listen to these guys from 5 a.m. till actually right now. I'm finally pulling back in my driveway.
Nice.
Yeah, but I just want to give you mad props, man. You are a virtual, I don't know what to call it. You just have so much knowledge about everything that's going on in the world of football, and it blows my mind to listen to you, because every time I hear him, I'm like, you know, I didn't even think about that. He's spot on. He is spot on.
Ron, that's so kind of you to say. And look, I mean, I'll say this right off the top to all our listeners, and a lot of people have met me in town. They know me, you know, pretty well, but when they talk to me, they can find out I'm not a real smart guy, but I've been doing this all of my life. And this is what I've done. I've been in this league over half my adult life, and I love doing it. And here's the other thing I love to do now that I'm able to do that I wasn't able to do as a coach. Now I can share this with other people. You know, I just did a big thing today, you know, as I said, over there in Dixon, you know, at Greystone with the Rotary and with the season ticket holders over there. But just as simply asking me, how do you define the personnel groups? But to be able to share it with you guys, with our listeners, and then on game day with everybody that listens, you know, of course, clearly, you know, to Mike Keith, who's the best in the world at what he does. But to be able to share that and this knowledge that I've gotten basically in 40 years of doing the same thing over and over and over, I absolutely love it. And to hear you say that, thanks, brother.
And now that you're not a coach, too, you're allowed to critique officials,
which I gladly did. No, and I did.
Yes, you did. So how difficult was that transition out of the game?
It's hard. Yeah. It's not hard doing what I do. I love what I do.
Because you're still in it.
I'm still in it. I love what I do. And doing it with Mike Keith and doing it for the Titans, I wouldn't, you know, you guys know I've had a chance to go do it some other places, you know, since I started doing it. I like doing it here. I like Nashville. I like the people. I like the organization. I love working. You know, I think Amy Adams Strunk and what she's doing is and Kenneth Adams and Steve Underwood, those guys are tremendous. The coaching staff, I mean, they treat me great. I love it. I love the fans here. I like the city, the vibe of the city. So I like what I'm doing. But I promise you, when it all gets cranked up and I'm standing out there on the field during training camp or during RTAs, it's real hard not to throw the sunglasses off and jump out there, you know, and start doing, because that's just who you are.
It's
and that's what
blood.
You do. And
that's what I always say. You see these coaches that retire in all sports that retire and go into broadcasting, and like Mac Brown, he's back.
No, yeah. I mean, because
head coach at Carolina.
Because here's what you miss from doing it. And as I said, I love what I'm doing. So fortunate to be doing it. I love it. And I like sharing it with all of our listeners, all of our ticket holders, all our fans. I love this. But the fact you miss the competition of getting these guys ready and watching guys improve and then putting a plan together, going to the best against the best, and then throwing it all out there on the line and all the decisions you have to make in milliseconds to go on for 3 hours, there's no better feeling than after an NFL game when you won it. I mean, there's because you put everything into it for the whole week. There's no better feeling, and on the other side of it, there's no worse feeling when you lose the ball game.
I'm just glad you didn't retire and just try to go sit on a ranch somewhere in Arizona.
Well, or I was well, somewhere. I was sitting on Malibu Beach when they called me.
That's a different thing.
That's not real ugly out there either. Coach Mack's been pretty fortunate in his life, but I'm fortunate to be doing this. I love this.
Well, we love having you in here, man.
On the way out here, kind of tell everybody.
Am I out already? What the what? Well, okay, let's go, Dawn.
We want you to stay forever.
Let's go.
If you want to stay till 5, you just let us know. no, schedule-wise, do you know, you and Rhett, when does it all start from the extra coverage with draft right around the corner? Is it Monday night or Tuesday night?
They're going to do something. Schedule? I think they're going to do something at 6 o'clock starting on Monday.
Okay.
On Monday night here, and then, we'll clearly have the coverage starting on Thursday. I think... JT, do you have all that information?
Yeah, 6 p.m. nightly starting Monday.
Okay.
And then,
I didn't know what you were...
Wall-to-wall coverage on Thursday. And
you just live here, so it doesn't matter,
yeah.
Right? You're like, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
They're going to have me. They're going to have us on that riverboat that they're bringing down.
Oh, yeah, General Jackson.
They're going to have us on the General Jackson, which
some
is going to...
season ticket holders.
That's going to be way cool. I can't wait for that. I mean, that's going to be good. I love this time of year. You know, I always... The first draft I was ever, involved in was 1986. You know, we took Neil Anderson in the first round. He was a 27th pick.
Florida, running back, 35.
And I love that right there. See, when I was over there in Dixon, those people were asking me ball questions. I just stopped and said, I knew I loved Dixon, because they were asking ball questions. That's why I like sitting here by you. You got ball questions. So, but anyway, this is a great time of year, and it's a great time of year for the fans. It really is, and that's what I like.
Well, for all of your draft coverage, 104.5 The Zone. We'll be all over downtown. He mentioned the General Jackson. There'll be some support on Nissan Stadium side, on a rooftop on Broadway. I mean, we're going to be all over the place covering this thing, and we can't wait. So thank you, Coach Mack. Good to see you.
Guys, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right.